Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Buzzing About Romance, where the tea is always hot and the romance is even hotter. Anyway, joining me for this, oh, and I'm Becky, in case you forgot who I was and you never listened before. Anyway, I'm so excited that I had a fun, quirky intro, and then anyway. Joining me for this episode is Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And Leah. Hello, Leah.
Hello, Becky.
It is April, and we are 4 months. This is the fourth month into 2025.
Feels like the 400th.
Right? January was 7,000.
This has been the longest year ever, and it's only 4 months in.
Yeah.
And I feel like the weather has really played a factor into that. I mean, I'm not sure about Amanda down in sunny Florida, if she's feeling like the effects, but like our winter was so freaking long.
We're having the opposite. Like right now, we came home from Colorado last week and we were like in a summer heat wave. Like it was like the middle of July in March.
Yeah. Well, it just, everything feels like it's taking 7,000 days. You know, January was 7,000 days long. February felt long. March, I felt like went really fast. But April, we're only, you know, it's only the 13th.
Yeah.
See, I'm the opposite. I thought February went really fast, but it's, since it's a short month, it was just like all of a sudden the end of February.
Yeah. And see,
but March was long for me.
But I was dealing with a lot in February. So.
This is true. February was rough for the Burrier household.
It was rough for us just this weekend. Anyway.
I mean, it's been a rough 2025.
Again. But on top of that, though, I feel like every day I sit down at my desk and I think to myself, what bullshit is gonna happen today in the book world?
Yeah, and it's multiple things a day.
It is. And we can't even, like, a lot of times we go through this stuff. And part of the reason that I don't think that we've done a tea episode like this in a while, a status of the book world, and discussed some of these hot button topics is because constantly it's just recycled topics over and over again.
Yeah, so, does romance need an HEA like every right. other day?
Or, well,
but also it's been such a dumpster fire of toxicity that like we just didn't want to pay attention to it.
We did.
I mean, we paid attention. We just did not want to like comment on it.
Well, there's also the conversation of like, don't sell your ARCs, give your ARCs away. And we had ARC police. Like it's, and by ARCs, I mean advanced reader copies for those that aren't aware of what I'm talking about. It just like, it gets to be, I just spend a lot of time going, why are you so stupid? Could you please shut the hell up?
Yeah.
And the amount of people that I have just blocked and muted, particularly on Threads, I can't. I cannot. That's where stupid goes to bloom.
It's the wild, wild west, and it does not get better. It only gets worse. Like, I feel like people forget that, like, we are humans and there are like feelings in the world. And just because you have a thought does not mean you have to put it out in the world.
No. And a lot of these people need a group chat.
So many people need a group chat.
But they also just need to, well, first off, grow the fuck up. Because a lot of it is like immature bullshit.
Well, I mean,
it drives me insane.
I understand that a lot of people are having a lot of big feelings and self-regulating is hard right now.
Yes, also true.
But don't, I mean, but you have to like not spew everything onto social media. That's why I said, like, we all have a lot of big feelings right now, but like we're more, I will come say ridiculous things in the group chat and then let you all, you know, just not judge
well,
me.
Well, and really, we don't judge you because earlier Jenny made something even bigger, like ragey. So
yeah.
Our rages feel small outside, compared to Jenny.
That's the thing.
Love
but
you,
with
Jenny.
With the group chat, we get the rage out. We get the, like, the feelings out.
Yeah.
And then the want to post is, it's still there. But also we say, like, we also have people in the group chat are like, don't post about this because that's a dumb idea.
Yeah, well, I feel like a lot of these people need those people in their lives.
I was telling an author recently because they were having some big feels about something. And I said, you should see the notes in my note app in my phone, because like I'll want to post a status or I'll want to say something and I'll type it out. Like I'll full out type it out in my notes app. Sometimes I read them to Leah. Sometimes I try to read them to Mike Burrier. But do they ever go anywhere? Rarely. Rarely. I might even.
Every once in a while, we edit and PC a little bit, and then that goes out. But more
Yeah,
often
but
than not, they stay in the notes.
yeah, but not the original version of what the hell is wrong
No,
with you people?
never, never the original. It has to go through like two or three versions before it is allowed to be put into the
Yes.
world. And Mike Burr usually like has to triple check and make sure it's safe because he is the voice of
He
reason.
is the voice of reason. But and I think Jen Ellen says here she thinks that a lot of people are getting Oh, Bonnie says that a lot of people have monetization on their
Yes.
Threads account and they need the engagement so they get their money.
Yep.
And it's really interesting because we at Buzzing About Romance were approached about monetizing our Instagram and our Threads. And I clicked, sure, why not? We've made 72 cents in like
Yes.
6 days.
We are rolling,
We all
rolling
get a
in the
dime.
money.
No.
You get a dime and you get a dime. Everybody gets a dime.
Right?
I'm
But
like
I
Oprah
could.
throwing those dimes out.
But like they send you little notes
The
that like you should
coins, not
increase your
other things.
engagements. You could be earning up to this amount of. And I just think it, I mean, it's constant. I think we get six or seven notifications a day in the email
Yeah, I
about.
saw that today. I was like, wait, what? What is
Yeah.
that? What kind of sorcery has happened here?
But if
And then I
we.
figured that you clicked something that you were either not supposed to or you did it by accident.
Actually did it on purpose because I was honestly really curious.
Yeah.
But they do, they every time you make like 2 pennies, they tell us. And I'm just like, okay, we made two
Hey,
cents.
maybe eventually we can be rolling in the dough and we won't have to dip into like personal funds to pay for the podcast.
Soon it will be quarters, Leah. Please don't dream too big.
Quarters.
We
I mean,
might
those
get a roll
quarters
of
add up.
quarters and then we can play quarters and drink together.
I mean, those quarters add up.
Jen Ellen asks about how many more hours we until we can monetize the YouTube. I'm not sure. I haven't looked in a minute.
Probably a lot.
Probably a couple hundred.
I don't know. We put a lot on the YouTube, though,
We
like
have, and we had
way more
extra
than we used to.
episode this week. And yes, please, if you're part of the Buzzing About Romance community, use our Discord as your group chat. We have a
Yes.
vent channel where you can
I
go.
like the vent channel. That was a good addition.
It was a good addition, just because sometimes you need to be angry about something. And really,
And
usually, it's the
things
stupid
that
people in the world.
happen in the Discord stay in the
They do.
Discord.
Yes,
Yeah, we do
they
not.
do. So let me preface
It
that.
doesn't
If
screenshot,
it
people
shows
don't
up
get
in the
out.
Discord, it never leaves
Yeah.
by word of mouth or by type.
Right. So on today's episode, we're diving into all the buzzworthy moments lighting up the romance book community in this first quarter of 2025, from spicy new releases, surprise drops on TikTok drama, author news and trends everyone's talking about. We're covering it all. Probably not releases, really. Whether you're here for the gossip, the glowing wrecks, or just want to stay in the know, we've got your back. So grab your favorite beverage, get cozy, and let's unpack everything that's setting the romance world on fire this week. Or this
We're
quarter.
already behind. She did this 2 days ago. We're already
We're
behind.
already behind. The one thing before we get into all the drama, let's just talk about reading. Our reading so far, kind of check in on 2025. Have you had any exceptional, outstanding reads that were like anticipated that you finally read and you were like, yes, this is a book of the year for me, even? Has anybody had one that they are like outstanding and want to talk about?
I already talked about mine. It's the last
I
car. It's This Wild Heart by Carla Sorensen. That's still my like top read so far.
that's on my TBR. I have not dived into it yet, but I'm ready for that one.
Yeah.
I have some big ones coming up that I've been saving. So
So I did the audio for the new Lucy score, and we have been broken up for a while because I didn't like her last like few books. The story of my life was really good. It was funny, and I think that I enjoyed it more doing the audio and like hearing the antics of, because Becky did the audio too, and she told me how good it was. I'm like, I'm gonna give that a listen. So I used a credit and bought that, and it was delightful.
It really was. It was better than I thought it would be. The audio, definitely, I can see where the audio wins over the reading it, because you do get a little bit more emotion, and it's two favorite narrators for that one. And so I really did enjoy the audio. And actually, I think my top read, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but Finding Home by Lauren Rowe.
Yeah.
That was a it's a book I've been anticipating since 2020. So to get that story was like,
Yeah, I'm saving that for later in the episode.
save that for later. But yeah, like I know that lots of people are experiencing some reading slumps and some things, but big name fan from our friends Ruthie and Annie, that was so good. And I
It was
really,
really good.
and I am enjoying, the other sapphic reads that we've got coming up later this year. So, bookish wise, it's been a little slow starting, but I really feel like we've got some great books coming too.
Yeah,
Well,
I
it's one
think
of those
April
things,
and
it's.
May and June are going to be really big.
There's been a lot of books that came out, and I have to say, like this year, like I've been a little disappointed in some of the books that I've really like have been anticipating. Not that they were bad, they just didn't hit the way that I wanted them to, and it might just be me, but and it's, yeah, because they weren't bad, they just I wasn't emotionally like distressed. But I've been reading a lot. I've been in like my dark mafia era again, and it seems to be my happy place.
Real quick, what do we think? Like, so we still are kind of in cowboy western romances. They're still pretty heavy. But what do you think, like, the second half of 2025, what's going to be kind of the slow trending styling of book, like subgenre? What do you think? What is your, or do you have a hope of what you hope it is?
Well, I mean, I think we kind of touched on this last week. Like, I'm hoping that we get more of the family saga stuff, which you said that you think is going to happen.
I
Like, I
do.
want that. Maybe like some of the bigger, like larger books, but I want like a secondary couple. Like I want, like I want these big sweeping like family sagas.
I
And the thing is, we've always had those. It's just people have been kind of sleeping on the authors that read the, like that write those ones. But yeah, I definitely like you're seeing more of that
Yeah.
like transition into that. Like there's a lot more messy like family dynamics where the family isn't bad, it's just the secrets and lies and like that type of
Well,
thing.
and if you
And
even
there's a
think.
lot more authors who are rolling into the dark, like they're testing it out, but then there's a lot that are rolling over to the romanticy where it's like they're
Yeah.
going both ways. Like contemporary, it's there and it's still going to be there, but I don't feel like contemporary as a whole is like most people are going to subgenre out.
Yeah, I don't think just straight contemporary. It's got to be, and if you're going to want to stand out in contemporary, I do agree with Amanda. It's got to be these like rich family sagas, built out families, or, and this is my guess for the next kind of trendy contemporary mix, is it's going to be that mi remix of the Gilmore Girls, that n
Oh, yeah.
East Coast small town. I mean, look how Pumpkin Spice Cafe has gone. We know that Brittany Nicole just sold a very similar version. And I think that we'll see some more growing happening on that East Coast. Because even The Story of My Life by Lucy Score, it's Pennsylvania outside Philly, New York. I'm assuming up in like the Allentown area based on how they described things. That we're going to see more of those. Like, this has that story. Star Hollow vibe to it.
Yeah, almost like you're taking like that type of setting and you're almost putting like a little bit of a rom-com, but that small town, like kind of like all of those vibes. Yeah, I get that.
I mean, because even if we look at like what Kaylee Ryan did with her one family that's like a 7, 8 books long, that was
Yeah.
the is that Kincaid Brothers?
The Kincaids.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the
No.
Kincaids
The
were a different one,
Riggins?
weren't they? The
The
Riggins
Riggins?
were.
No, the
Well, she does a
Riggins.
lot of bigger families, though,
She
because Riggins was
does.
fairly big.
That was like 5 books. And then the parents had a novella of their
Here, I'm
story
gonna. It's
together.
the one that she just finished recently, though,
Yeah.
right?
Oh, the Everlasting Ink one?
No,
No,
Stay
that one was just a group of
Over.
friends.
It's
We're just naming all of her
all of
books.
her books.
Yeah.
But she does write.
The Kincaids, you're
Yeah,
right.
Kincaid's. Okay.
But she's gonna roll into football, and I feel like we're gonna see more sports, but not necessarily hockey.
Okay. You
I think
think.
people are finally starting to realize that hockey is not the only sport that they can write about, because I've seen more people talking about rugby books, and I've seen like little small pockets popping up. So
Yeah.
I think not that we're not gonna get hockey books, because
Yeah.
there is an
And we've talked
overfill of
about why
hockey right
hockey
now.
is popular because it's a predominantly white person sport and the other sports are not.
But I think that people are finally acknowledging that there are other sports out there that can be written about and written about well. And so, like, I think if we get a couple of like the bigger name authors that people like that are in the top 100s a lot, more people will follow that trend as
Yeah, like
well.
well, Pippa Grant, she's writing her
She's in
rugby
rep.
series right now. And then Jen Ellen thinks that we'll have more Formula One, and I know that to be true. The other subgenre I think is going to be this romantic thriller, romantic horror kind of vibe, kind of like what Butcher and Blackbird did, but maybe a little. Some of them I think will be a little darker. Some of them might be a little more rom-com like that was. You've seen Lights Out go big like that. So I do think
Well,
that.
and we've seen where Vi, Keeland, and Serena Bowen have both went that thriller route, so I wouldn't be surprised if we find them bringing them together, like their thrillers and
And
their
the
rom like
romance.
romances,
Yeah.
and blending the two, because their thrillers have sold well.
Yeah. Yeah,
Let's
so it'll be
see.
interesting to see.
Why
So,
is this?
one of the first topics that we should talk about, as we mention Vi and Serena, is the indie author who has traditionally been a full indie author moving to trad pub and full rights education for their readers. So, I'm going to use this author, I'm going to use two authors as examples. So when Lucy Score wrote Maggie Moves On, she wrote it for Forever, and they actually optioned that for 3 books, but she only ever wrote one, and she will only ever write one. And there's some theories about why we'll only ever see one, but I'm not going to disclose those because we don't have like true solid fact on that. So when Lucy did that, all she did was talk and talk, 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 talk about this new book that was coming out with Forever. She was so excited to see her book in Target. But she never really went the extra step and educated her readers on what the difference with this book and all her other books was going to be. And typically, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that we often say authors owe readers nothing. Like, they don't owe you a story. They don't owe you their time. They owe you nothing. Except this is the one time where I feel like authors do owe their readers the education on this. Because if we really think about it, the average reader, so you're in an author group, but you're not necessarily like an on the bookstagram side of things or in the thick of the publishing world, they don't understand how one book can only be KU. When they see other books that are KU, but also 7 other places. Like the little nuances of publishing, readers don't always get. They just know they like that author's books, right? And we'll get into it more because, we'll talk about KU and some of the problems it's having. But so Lucy, as an author, didn't take the time to educate her readers that she didn't publish this book. She had a Big Five publisher. So it was not going to be in KU, that it was going to be a release, you know, and this is a book that you're going to want to ask for at your library. Or, you know, because when it dropped and it had a $12.99 ebook, her friends, her readers went batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like she still has recovered completely from that release, as far as readers, like, trusting her.
I mean, the trust might not be there, but the flow is still there. Because, I mean,
well, yeah,
I mean, books she's still... are still up. Like, whether or not they trust her or not, they're still reading the book. So, I mean, she made a big misstep in not educating. But at the end of the day, like, as long as, like, the price point is, like, people are happy with the price point, they're going to read her books.
Well, and I think her right move after the flop of Maggie was going with more of, like, the Bloom, when she sold to Bloom. And it was just her paperbacks, not any of her digital rights. So she was able to still keep it at her price point in Kindle Unlimited.
Well, she's one of those ones. She definitely learned from her mistakes.
But there are a ton of authors that people aren't necessarily talking about that have announced their big deals. And I peek into their reader groups and they are not educating their readers. And then we, so like Maggie Gates, she sold her Fireproof, Downpour, she sold those books. And they're only, she didn't, she sold full rights.
Yeah.
But I think that the terms of the KU stay through 2025. And then in 2026, they, you know, it'll be up to the publisher where those books remain. And her new books will likely be full releases at $12.99 plus for an ebook.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and she's been hosting, she sent out newsletters. I mean, I just don't think she's, I don't know if she can or can't say anything about what's happening with the new books, but she's been posting about what's happening with the Griffith Brothers.
I saw she's posted what's happening with the covers. Has she covered that the ebooks could leave Kindle Unlimited?
I'll have to go check.
Yeah, I feel like I don't remember seeing anything about it. Just that there are possible changes, because I wonder if it's one of those things where she's not 100% sure where things are going.
Yeah, and I think that may be it.
Might be that, like, because one sometimes, like, the publishers, like, they create the terms with KU and, like, everything else after the fact, like, so it's not like they don't know that stuff right away either.
They work out new contracts
between Amazon and everybody else, because that's the thing, like, these publishers have a contract with Amazon to allow them to be wide and in KU.
Yeah, I think she said that the UK is definitely, they're not going to be available, I believe, in the UK, like, on KU, and she may not know about the US yet.
Yeah, the US can be hit or miss, because The other ones that are kind of in question are, you have this multi-author group that wrote those little cute fall books, autumn themes books, and they have all sold to Avon. I think there's still one left that's in negotiations. But
I think it's sold. It's one of those things where I'm sure it's sold. We just haven't heard the announcement yet. But that's one of those ones. I'm sure they looked at that series as a whole, but since they're all, like, individual authors and it was just a collaboration series, they had to do everything individually.
Yeah, but those ebooks are already priced at $12.99, so that tells you they sold the full rights, and at any time those ebooks could exit Kindle Unlimited. So, and again, I'm not saying the authors owe their readers anything, but I do think that there's a transparency that should happen, particularly because we know that Brittany Nicole sold a whole series to a publisher, to, I think, to Dell, might have been to Putnam. She sold a whole series, but she, and it's just a newer announcement, and I don't think those books start hitting the shelf till the spring of 2026. But those are going to be full write books, meaning they will not drop to KU. They are going to be, you know, $12.99 for an ebook. And I know we've talked about this briefly, but publishers do not see ebooks any different than they see a paperback.
No.
The pricings are going to be the exact same because in their mind.
Honestly, sometimes we see a cheaper paperback.
We see a cheaper paperback. Because it's the same amount of editing. It's the same amount of, you know, publicity, same amount of work goes into the digital book as goes into the paperback.
They're just making a lot more money on the digital.
Yeah. And I think you, like, we are all like originally like trad pub readers from a long time ago. And so when the ebooks first started coming out, we saw those ebooks be priced at this price point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's always been like a possibility that we know about. And I think a lot of newer readers who start out in KU especially and have never had to buy a trad book.
Yeah, there's a shock.
Yeah,
there's
it's a big
sticker
shock
essentially.
Yeah. Well, but I also,
it's one of those things where, but people have to realize that I don't think the authors think about the fact that their readers aren't able or willing to spend $12.99 on a book sometimes. And I think it goes into their vanity side where it's like, I have these loyal readers. It doesn't matter how much this book is going to be, they're going to buy it.
Yeah. Well, and I do think there are some, and I don't want to take any excitement.
I'm not saying every author, but I think there are some.
And I don't want to take excitement from authors that are excited for this trad pub.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it legitimizes them as an author. I think that as soon as you write a book or as soon as you put words to a page, you're an author. And then you become a published author as soon as you hit published. And we've had discourse and discussions about the whole authors who are like, this is my debut, but they've written 3 other indie books or 50 other indie books. And they're like, look at me, I'm a real published author. No, come on, stop
You've
using those words.
You've always been a real published author. Right, you're just a traditionally published author who has somebody doing all the back end stuff for you now.
But I would like to see readers, particularly readers that read in KU, not give authors a hard time that are indie authors about upping the ebook price of their books, especially if they're in Kindle Unlimited. And I know that Amazon has a certain like price point that you have to stay within for certain royalty.
Well, and like you get a bigger percentage, like your price point, like where it's at, like your percentage changes, like depending on where your price point is. So some authors pick a price point because they're getting a bigger chunk of their book money.
But I just don't think we should complain about like, $6.99 books or $7.99 books.
But the thing is, it's a business. And if you're spending money, you need to be able to make money.
Yeah.
And like as we've all see the world is kind of in a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And like things are more expensive.
So one of the other things that happened along this lines of books and stuff is author Saffron Kent, her PA, took to her to Saffron Kent's reader group and posted that if she saw one person complain about the price of Saffron Kent's next book because it is a book that is being published with Forever, that she will boot them and block them from the author's reader group.
Yeah, and this came after a reader sent Saffron a personal message saying that, you know, that they're really upset about the $11.99 price and that they weren't willing to spend that much money on her books because they didn't think she was a good enough author to warrant that amount of money, especially after her last 3 releases. Like sent her a personal message, which
that is not okay in any sense of the world. But hey, that is the world we live in.
That is the opinion. And so like I know where her PA was coming from, but she should
but
not
that was
have
a
gone that
gut
far.
Move.
Yeah.
That was a I didn't ask the group chat if this was okay type of thing. Yep. So
again, some of these PAs are out here though. Yep. I think that there was a much more political, like acceptable way to make a statement.
There's a way better way
than the way she did it.
Yeah.
Well, you can word it nicer. You could like make it a learning experience for the readers as a whole. Like Here's the thing. Don't be a bitch.
Right. Okay. So next thing we feel like we really need to talk to about, because it's within these lines of Indy's going to Trad Pub. We have all seen Elsie Silver's new deal with Atria, which is a division of Simon & Schuster,
Yes.
and it is an unprecedented seven-figure deal for four books. In her negotiations, she was able to keep the digital rights for the US and the US only on a seven-figure deal, like unprecedented. Now, someone was saying that, like, oh, well, this is such a better deal because this is a label. Bloom was only a or this is a full publisher. Bloom was only a label. Listen, Atria and Bloom are the same. They're publishers owned by larger publishers. They're all part of the Big Five machine. So you have to take the actual, like, who owns it now out of the equation. The only thing that I will say on the Elsie Silver stuff is it is unprecedented. Like, agents across the board cannot figure out how Kimberly Brower was able to negotiate it. They must have wanted the books that bad. And it will likely be one title every 8 to 10 months from her to stretch out. You will not be getting two books a year from her.
It'll be like for like old school trad
She
pub.
actually, so Lucy Score is one book a year now. And that there are a lot of authors that want to go. They don't want to do the grind of six, eight books a year.
Well, there's so many, they're getting burnt out. Like, I've talked to multiple authors who do not put out as many books as other authors because, one, because they still have day jobs, but also, two, like, they don't want to burn out. Like, I work with an author where she pumped a ton of books out, like, the words were flowing, but she got burnt out. And she's like, I can't keep going on that scale because it's not going to be fun anymore.
No. The one thing I will say about Elsie Silver that kind of kitches in my craw a little bit is because she's a Canadian author and she has rallied, her Canadian readership rallied around her. Her Canadian readership was really pivotal in her popularity and her surge, with that first series, the Off to the Races series. Like, that Canadian readership was really, really important. The fact that she didn't fight for those digital rights, that she was kind of like, yeah, UK, Commonwealth, you can have my stuff. Canada, because Canada falls under the UK publishing rights. She said, sorry, I'm not worried about you, but I really want the US digital rights. And her North American rights do not include Canada. They do not. Her North American rights are only US rights. And Jen Ellen is asking if the editing will be different. Likely, yes. She will have new editors at Atria.
Well, they have a team that they use.
So there, she could probably keep her old editor that has been doing her indie books and stuff. But she can use that in her process, but she will have to submit final manuscripts to the editorial team at Atria, and then they will send her corrections and changes that have to be made. Versus currently at Bloom, she's doing her whole entire typical indie setup and then submits the book. Their team will read through it, like, which leads to our next issue. Her team will read through it. But they might not make huge edit. They might, if something's like glaringly bad, they'll make some editorial suggestions. But overall, they'll the man. Well, they'll make
Will they?
suggestions
Well,
because
this is true. Suggestions are made. Whether or not they're taken is something different.
right. And I venture to guess that her, because Jen Ellis is saying, is wonder if her voice will change a bit and the books won't meander as much. I believe
I
that they
think
will.
yes.
I know the editorial staff at Simon and Schuster and at Atria, and I think that it'll be a harsher, redder pen. I do think.
You know, I wonder because they spent so much money on these books, though, if they're just going to kind of be like, she knows what works and just leave her alone.
That's a real possibility. Although they also are paying her seven figures, though, are they going to
I don't
say,
think that they're going to
yeah.
just push this to the side because they
No,
want,
I don't
they,
think they're going to
yeah.
push it to the side, but I don't know that they'll put that much on the, you know, I just wonder. I'm not saying they won't.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they'll kind of like pull back on that because
It's a
they're like, well,
fair
she
theory.
knows how it works, and so they don't need to waste resources on this.
That's
You know what I
true.
mean? Because they've already spent this much money. It's just a thought. I don't know that that's
And again, this is all circumspect,
unprecedented.
yeah, and unprecedented. We don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And I don't believe we'll even get this first book until the fall of 2026 or
No,
end of
it's not
summer of
for.
2026
They
because she
didn't
has.
have any dates or anything like that. And when that
I
happens, it
think
could
she
be
has.
like a year, year and a half out.
I think she has two more books
In the current
in the
series?
current series, the one that comes out in September, and then I think there's one coming out like the following January. And that's ends her Bloom contract. And when I say ends her Bloom contract, it just means no more new titles will be published from her to Bloom. So summer of 2026, that's what I thought. So she'll have her the Rose, is it Rose Hill, I think is this current series or something.
Yes,
So
yes,
she
yes.
has a book coming September, and then the next book will come out in January, and then there will be no new series from her at Bloom. Everything goes over to Atria for the next four books. And we could see her at the end of these four books go somewhere else. You know, because if we look at it, you know, someone like Nora Roberts, and not that I'm saying Elsie Silver is the next Nora Roberts, because I'm friggin' not saying that,
You're just using her
at
as an
all. I'm just,
example.
you, Nora has been
But
with
you
tons of
figure how,
publishers. That's all I was
but
getting
you
to.
also look at like Helena Hunting has published at multiple publishing houses at like in the same year. Avery Flynn has like produced works from multiple publishing houses in a year. So it's not uncommon for authors to sign with more than one like publishing house and continue to do work for them.
Karen is saying, do you think TikTok was a huge part of her getting this deal? No. I
Nope.
don't think this has anything to do with TikTok. I think this has to do with the popularity.
This is numbers. It's all about the numbers.
And Atria did some reorganization because Simon and Schuster got a new buyer in the fall of 2023. I think the effect of it went into 2020, like January 2024 started with the new buyers. Because if you remember a while ago, Penguin Random House was trying to buy Simon and Schuster and it got blocked by the
The whole
courts.
monopoly thing, yeah.
And so Simon and Schuster got an infusion of cash and new buyers, and they did some reorganization. They cut some labels, they changed some labels, and they added a label. So they have a label now that is predominantly for Latinx authors. They have a fantasy, romantasy label that is under that Latinx because that's the one Natalie Kenya just signed with for her
Oh,
next
yeah.
book. Her, I think it's a paranormal witchy
Paranormal.
romance.
Yeah, it's paranormal witchy.
And they, Simon and Schuster has done a couple of deals with some authors that have named their own labels. So, distribution deals for T.L. Swan's Keeperton and Meredith Wild. They already had Waterhouse Press, which is the one that is doing Melanie Moreland's, like her kidnapper books and all the books that we're seeing for Melanie that are getting paperback distribution. That's Waterhouse Press. And then they also have Meredith Wild's Pages and Bind distribution. So Atria needed Simon and Schuster for their Atria, which is their romance label. They needed a shining star. They needed someone to push this label to the next level to, because you have to have, in today's day and age, it's, you have to have a well-known name and a hot commodity leading your label to push you forward. So we saw this over at HarperCollins with Avon. You know, they wanted to get more contemporary, less historical, so they bought Tessa Bailey. She had a huge presence. People love her books, they sell. And then Canary Street bought Kristen Callahan's old stuff and now they've gathered Amy Dawes. Again, people that have platform, have established readerships, and Atria didn't have that. So they needed someone, and why not go for one of the bigger fishes? And at this point, mm-hmm. I don't think that someone like Lucy Score was going to go over there. And we know Megan Quinn is very happy at Bloom. So there weren't, if you look at Bloom, the top performing authors in that label, I think that Elsie was the one to go for. And I think she, as much as I don't love her books, out of all those authors, I think she has longevity in her favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't
agree.
I don't think her, like, I think Lucy Score's books can be a little dated at times because I think she writes very trendy in this moment. Lucy or Elsie's books tend to have a little bit more shelf life,
yeah,
a little more longevity.
Yeah, and I think she was, I mean, I don't know, she may work with like another label, but it seemed like she was ready to pull back some to go to that more traditionally published schedule too.
Yeah.
So I think it was like a meeting of the minds, like what they probably both wanted to bring to the table.
Yeah. And Jen Ellen again is asking, but aren't her numbers pushed by TikTok? No.
No.
I don't think so anymore. I think that Elsie Silver has made herself a household name and a bookstore name. And while, yes, she got a lot of push and start from TikTok.
But if you look at her books, a lot of them don't have that best book talk tag on them.
No.
Like,
no.
The ones that have, like, gone viral, they often have the best of book talk tag. And she might have one that has that, but I don't, I mean, granted, I don't troll her, like, Amazon pages very often, but I don't think any of her books have a best of TikTok.
And I don't know that best of book talk equates to New York Times bestseller.
It doesn't, but like I'm saying, like without that, like it wasn't important on TikTok.
Yeah. Jen Ellen's asking, she'll have a whole big publicity push like the Alec Aster recent release. That first book coming out of Atria, it will be everywhere and it will have multiple special editions. It will be huge. It will be a huge release because they need to grandstand and show themselves like, look, we are Elsie Silver's home now, especially with the amount of money that they paid her.
Yeah, it's going to be way bigger than the Rose Hill. Like, you know, we think that there is a lot for Rose Hill. Just wait.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, so that kind of leads into... well, we'll get to it. I want to talk about this real quick because we're coming out of a PolyCon was this weekend. Uh-huh. We're talking book signings. We are in the height of book signing season. There was Magic of the Bells in Orlando a couple weeks ago, and the reviews out of that, readers had the best time.
Yeah,
authors really were pissed.
Yeah.
Because
it was a mixed bag.
Like so many authors have come out and said, I'm not doing signings anymore. I'm done. I'm pissed. This is not what.
Oh, I didn't hear what the authors. I was on vacation when this happened. I was actually supposed to go to that signing and then I canceled it. I had tickets and sold them, but I only heard like the good reader experiences. I didn't hear what the
reader experiences were great. They got to see every author they wanted to see. There were never any lines. No authors ever got wristbanded. Everything was manageable. But here's the deal. They added a whole nother room. So it ended up being like two giant ballrooms for both authors or for all the authors. And they had a huge author lineup. They never, once they added that extra ballroom, they never added any more tickets.
Oh.
So it was the
so
same.
So they almost doubled their author amount, but not people.
But not their people. So like the last 2 hours, there were no lines. Amy Dawes, because it was the release of 9-month contract, was that Tuesday before.
Yeah.
The last hour and a half, she had nobody in her line. She was out flitting around, taking pictures with other authors. If you look at the pictures from the author side,
it's empty.
It's empty.
Oh, wow. Oh, nobody, I didn't hear that.
Nobody had lines, everything. Nobody ever had wristbands.
So, like, as an attendee, like, it was
great experience.
Amazing.
Yeah, because it was the opposite at when they did Sweetgrass, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah, they undersold the event, which I don't have a problem with because I'm sure they made their money, right? But a
Yeah.
lot of authors, like Aurora Rose Reynolds went, she did not sell any books outside of her pre-releases or her pre-orders,
Pre-orders.
her pre-orders. People just weren't shopping because Bell's events have not been able to be shopping because it's usually so crammed and so intense.
Yeah, I
Well, and that's
mean,
the thing. And if you went to
they
a
need to
Bell
find
signing
the.
before, like you went into it with an expectation that you were basically going to have to like speed through and like not have any of that time.
Yeah, that was what I mean. I ended up leaving out of town, but like that was one of the reasons I didn't even go because I was like, I'm not gonna stand in these lines again and wait. So but that's horrible for the authors. I mean, I'm glad the readers had a better experience, but they need to find
Yeah,
like
it's like
a like the in
that
between.
double-edged sword where it's like I'm so happy that the readers had a really great experience because we don't always have a great reader experience like feedback, but like the fact that the authors like did not have successful and like you figure how much money they put into those signings, like most of them probably did not make
A
their
lot of
readers
authors
back.
came out of that signing saying they were not doing any more signings. Like
That's
Deborah
terrible.
Anastasia is completely done with signings. She will not be doing them anymore. And there were several others that were at that event that were just like, this is not worth my time and my money anymore. The other thing that we're seeing is because the US is a dumpster fire from hell, many authors that live out of the United States are not coming to the US for book signings. And there
Yeah.
was recently, just this week, a bookstore was trying to bully an author that was coming in from Canada, maybe?
I think so. It was Evelyn Lee is or not, was it Evelyn Lee or no, Lee something.
Lee something. Lee Green, maybe?
Maybe.
I
I
don't know.
forget.
Whoever
I
it
don't
was, it was an
remember.
author that was supposed to be coming into a bookstore signing in Texas. And the bookstore like took to a campaign, was like, tell this author it's safe for them to come here. Tell this author they'll have the best time. And the author's like, no, I'm worried that if we come in, my husband, my children, and I will not get out. And that's some really valid feelings.
It's some valid feels, and honestly, like it's very frustrating that people get mad at an author who is worried about their well-being.
Yeah, Amy Olivia, she is Brazilian, lives in Brazil, but she's like, I have an accent and I have dual citizenship, US and Brazil, but are they going to detain me? Am
Yeah,
I.
Aria Cole, I'm not, I can't remember where she lives, but she's not doing any signings that she has to travel like
Well,
to the US
and
for.
so it. Allie
Allie
Hazelwood
Hazelwood
is not
too.
traveling outside the US because she's a green, she has a green card. Is she a US citizen now? I think she is. I think she's a
I think she
naturalized
is, but
citizen.
she was worried about getting back in because she said the same thing. She has an accent, correct? I believe was the same thing she said. Yeah. And people were taking to her comments, just
Yeah,
bashing
I think
her
she might
for
have gotten her
canceling a
citizenship a
signing.
few years ago, but it's.
Oh, the author that canceled the te in Texas is now doing a signing in Massachusetts. But I,
Interesting.
again, Massachusetts is a safer
Exactly.
state than Texas.
Yes.
Well, but my question is too, like, where in Canada are they from? Are they just driving across? Because, like,
Probably.
flying, like, I'm not saying that any of it is okay, but, like, driving and flying, like, I feel like those are two vastly different ways. Like, I mean, granted, they're vastly different ways to travel, but, like, the restrictions and, like, all those things
Well,
seem
yeah,
a
I
bit
mean,
more
but
chaotic.
unfortunately, Texas and Massachusetts are vastly different political climates in
Well, this
this
is also true.
country.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
they are.
So there's that piece for the signing. Zoe York, who is
Oh,
Canadian,
yeah.
but most, doesn't is
She's not coming.
she's not coming. She was supposed to be at that signing in Cincinnati later this year, and she's canceled all US visits, which again, they have to keep themselves safe, and we don't know what's happening, right? But one of the things that recently came up, and I bring this up because Apollycon was this weekend, which I have heard Apollycon was a little bit of a fire. And I do say this to signing organizers, not every person that gets a ticket is on Facebook. And so you have to have some way to communicate to your participants that is not based on other social media. You need to be able to communicate to them either via a newsletter or either a website. Imagine, because I was watching someone's TikTok about a PolyCon. She is not on Facebook. And she ended up making a Facebook account and getting on. And it took over a week for them to approve her to get into the group because she had not gotten a schedule or knew about these extra events that she supposedly her ticket gave her opportunities to get into. Come to find out,
she missed it.
She missed them all. They were all sold out or all filled, and she didn't get any of them because it never says in buying the ticket, make sure you join our Facebook group. There was never a newsletter that went out. And I feel like this is the 10th year for a PolyCon. Meta spaces are not safe spaces for many people, and therefore you need to communicate outside of Facebook and Instagram.
Also, not everybody is on social media. Some of them are strictly readers who just like to like meet the authors that they read. Like,
right.
And I think that's the thing that a lot of these signings forget is the fact that not everybody is an influencer. There are people who just read because they like to.
Well, and a PolyCon started out as kind of a fandom for fantasy readers signing.
So you would think that they would know better.
It's a true con because you have fantasy readers from across the board. It's not just romance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you would think, but the other thing, so this is the interesting thing that brings it up, is apparently a PolyCon is notorious for children under 10 being allowed to come to the signing with their parents. They don't need a ticket. They can just come. And especially like a PolyCon has lots of romance authors now that are participating. And we all know there's an uptick in not suitable for work art and squishy peens. And
yeah, I wonder though, which I, you know, I don't know the history of a PolyCon that well, but do you think it's because it was originally like a true fantasy con and that they just haven't adjusted for the fact that they've added so much romance?
I do. I absolutely.
Yeah, most likely.
I absolutely think that is.
But there you see kids at a lot of signings.
And I'm not talking about like a nursing child. That because is not that what is I'm different. Talking about. That is different. Mm. What I'm or a newborn. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds running around, authors bringing their children with them. No, no, thank you. Get a babysitter. Get a husband, get a spouse, get a partner, get someone, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, someone to watch that child.
I mean, you can't say that you don't have a friend that couldn't, like, even if you had to take them with you because of, like, reasons. Like, you can't tell me there isn't somebody else that you could bring with you to, like, hang out with them while you're doing your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Find a teenager to be, like, at the pool with your child or in the hotel room or something. I just... Yeah, if I knew children were attending a romance signing, I would be very skeptical to attend. Just because I go to those things to be an adult.
Yeah.
Not to participate with, although my child, but she's 19. She does go with
she
us.
She doesn't count.
Yeah, that's different.
Does she count, though?
She has to buy an adult ticket if she goes.
She has does. To buy a ticket.
She does. Okay, so another thing that's come up very recently, and this will be our last topic before we go to our end. See, you were right, Amanda. We had more than enough to talk about.
So we'll have to do episode 2.
Maybe. So one of the other discourse, especially as we get into 2025 and what a shit show it's been, the whole books are political, books aren't political, keep your politics out of my books. Not everyone is in a bookish community understanding. This has gotten out of control.
Yeah.
And I don't. Okay. We all know I don't like Emily Rath. I think she caused a lot of problems. I think she did a lot of things in that hockey scandal that she then all of a sudden acted like she never had a part of and that she was not okay with how people were being sexualized. And I say bullshit. That being said,
anyway,
I have zero issue to what she did.
Nope.
And if you aren't aware of it, she took to TikTok and basically said, because she was getting comments from people, and she basically said to someone that, and I don't know the exact word, so I'm paraphrasing here, that her spaces, her social medias, her reader group, her stuff is not safe for anyone that voted for the Orange Menace. Because her space is a safe space for queer, for people of color, for the underserved. It is not for those that loved the Orange Menace and voted for him. And I don't think what she did was wrong, but man, the Orange fans got mad.
My thing is, what she did initially was not wrong. It was the aftermath that she just kept hitting.
So she started trolling her own comments. And picking every conservative that was trying to justify their reasonings for voting the way they did, which we all have those people in our lives.
Yes.
She started using those comments to troll them back, to basically like deflate all their arguments. Again, I don't have any problem with it, but I don't think you need to make 8 videos a day doing it.
That's my thing. It's like, if you're going to do it, that's fine. But like, there's a line.
Just yeah, block.
I mean, we all know that. I mean, I think we all know that she likes to stir the pot.
She does. She does.
You know, and then and that's just like, just that's fine. Whatever. I mean, I have no problem with anything that she said, and I don't have any problem with the fact that she reiterated those comments to people because, and again, we can go back to like the person in Saffron Kent's reader groups, like. Like, these are the author's spaces.
Yeah.
Like, their personal, like, their Facebook reader groups, like, their social media, like, these are their spaces. Like, we don't want them coming into our spaces on Goodreads and other things. And I'm being very broad in this generalization, but I don't have any problem with her, like saying get out.
I don't have any problem with her saying get out. I think she's every right to get out because in the exact opposite movement, we saw the fallout with Sophie Lark. Sophie Lark got called out for some very conservative coded stuff within her book and some things that
are really
offensive.
Don't even say that conservatively coded. It was not coded.
Well, she makes a comment about migrant and people that will pick the grapes, and then she made comment about her love of her character's admiration for Ilania, because that's just what I'm going to call him. And she got hammered, rightly so, except you will now note the apology is gone. The apology is gone, and she was in her reader group liking every supportive comment that people just don't understand, that you did nothing wrong. Ilania is a great person, and, you know. And
but
she
in that same breath, like, I, you know, and I don't know this, but I feel like the people who don't agree with that probably got out of there.
You,
like, you know what I mean?
So.
It's like the people who don't agree with, like, Emily Rath, then just get out of there. Like, you know, on both sides. It's like,
that's the thing. Like, you're in a space that you chose to be in.
Yes.
You can choose to walk out of that space as well.
Right.
Like, you don't have to go in and comment because it doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah, go on Threads like everybody else does.
Like, exactly.
Just make sure I see it, okay? Thanks.
That's the thing. Like, you chose to be in that space.
Yeah.
You may choose to leave it if you do not agree with them.
But we also have figured out that these guppy goldfish readers have the smallest memories of readers in the world.
Yeah.
Because Tilly Cole, she wrote a racist KKK book. Jamie McGuire, KKK stuff, like racist stuff. Those books are still selling. They're still getting lots of deals. And I'm telling you that Sophie Lark book will come out probably this fall without any edits.
Well, there are no plans like that we can find that they're pooling it.
No, and we know that book has already been printed because it had sprayed edges and it was due out in May. So it's been sitting in a warehouse for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, and I would go back to this other point that, you know, we were talking about before, that a lot of reader spaces are not on social media. Or, I mean, a lot of readers aren't necessarily on social media.
No.
So like some people don't even know that, you know, I mean, when they read the book, they will, but you know, like some people who have may have read like other books and not
You figure
necessarily this book, you don't know,
the
you know.
majority of people who read these books don't know what's going on
Particularly
in
these
these other
authors that
spaces.
have these distro contracts where they're not necessarily buying the
They're
ebooks.
picking it up in Target. It's
They
a random person who walks past and says, "Ooh, that's a pretty color.
yeah. Or
That's a
they
nice
read
cover.
something
I'm
like
going to pick this up."
a little, you know, note card on Barnes and Noble that says this is such and such favorite book. Like, you know, it's like
Or they see that it got a wrote up in People's Magazine or got it celebrated in Vanity Fair. And so they're like, yeah, let's pick this up. I saw this book. It was all the buzz. Sometimes that's great because you get Kennedy Ryan's out of that. And sometimes it sucks because then you see Jamie Maguire's achieving.
But
And
you have in like but you have that across the board in every like space. Like if you're in a sports world, like in like other like bookish like genres and subgenres, like there's always the good and there's always the bad, and there are assholes that succeed and you're like, why? But there's always the good that succeed also, and you want to see those people succeed.
No, I agree.
But you just can't get away. Like, there's just shitty people
Yeah,
who are
just
successful, and like, you can't get away from that.
so Jen Ellen brings up some conservatives thinking Susan Collins is for them. Have they read her books? Now, I think the funniest discord about the Suzanne Collins was that people were mistaking the Republican representative Susan Collins, and that she's the one who wrote the Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping, not Suzanne Collins.
I mean, that letter,
That,
it's
you know,
really,
that was
I
the
mean, it's a big
funniest
thing, that
thing.
letter.
Susan is the conservative piece of garbage. Suzanne is the delightful human that wrote The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Difference.
Again, deductive reasoning, critical thinking skills. I
Is
mean,
a
you
Google
know,
search,
Google.
perhaps.
Yep.
It's amazing what you can learn when you search Google.
Okay.
What did we do before? Oh, wait, I know. We looked it up in the encyclopedia.
Nobody wants to go back there. Or we read
I
a
mean,
newspaper. That might help some of these people.
this is true.
I mean,
I
not
didn't have to get my
really.
news from an email and then wonder if it's real. Do you
Okay.
ever get like news emails and you're like, is this a real like news story or is this like a fake news story? Well,
No.
because sometimes I get random stuff and I don't know if it's real or not.
I
So
would.
then I
If
go
it's
to the
coming to me
Google and I
random,
search.
then
My
I'm
heart
thinking no.
says it's probably fake, Leah,
Yeah.
99% of the times if
Well,
it's random.
sometimes I'm curious, so I have to go to the Google and find
And
out for
this is why
sure.
we worry about Leah.
Nobody worries about me. I'm perfectly fine.
Okay.
In my small town bubble, just leave me in my happy.
Okay, so that's where we're at on those topics. I'm sure we'll probably do another round of this later
Because
on.
we have a whole bunch more to talk about.
We do. We didn't really even barely cover anything. You
It
need
was
to.
in my junk mail, Jenny. There's no subscription list.
Anyway, okay, it's that time. It's that
It's that
time
time
for
for book
Book of
of
the
the
Week.
week.
It is Book of the Week time. Leah, what's your Book of the Week?
So I actually am not doing a ton of reading because, like, other reading. It's basically podcast reading. So my book of the week is Playing for Keeps by Lainey Davis. It's her new hockey series. It's rom-com, second gen, set in Pittsburgh. I had a delightful conversation with her about the book for an author spotlight. We talked about all things Pittsburgh and Marc-Andre Fleury and how much we love him, who is he's an actual like real goalie, and there's purpose to that conversation. But yeah, it's just a really great,
It's
don't laugh at me.
a wake up married in
It's a
Vegas.
wake up married in Vegas. Like she,
Curvy
Emerson
heroine.
is running away from her like overbearing like parent. She's very sheltered. She has the love for the cello, but she is not allowed to play it because it is undignified to play the cello. And then Gunnar is second generation stag family, and he is the goodest golden retriever you will read. He's such a good boy.
And this is her first time putting a series in Kindle Unlimited. So you can find this book in Kindle Unlimited. Book two, I believe, is coming out in June-ish, early June. So she's going
I think so.
To rapid release these a little more.
Yeah. But it's going to be, so Gunnar is one of four. His older brother, Odin, has a book.
Yeah,
previous. In the previous, like, stag trilogy. And then he has twin brothers who are going to be the last two books in this like small hockey series, but all three of them play for the same team, which is unprecedented, but it does happen, which is something that we talked about also.
You do not need to read the first gen first.
No, you don't.
Nope. You can start right now with Playing for Keeps.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. It's really funny. It's like, it's an easy read, but it's cute. And
like Lainey is a delightful human. Boy. She is a Bookcase mm-hmm. Media client. I've worked with her for a little over a year now, and she's delightful. Yeah. And I'm super excited. I'm going to celebrate with her in May. I get to see her at a book signing. So
yeah,
I'm super excited for that.
And she's from the Pittsburgh area. She's in my neck of the woods. So it's exciting.
Amanda, what's your book of the week?
Well, I mean, I'm still very much in my Rockstar era. As soon as we finished Rockstar by Lauren Rowe last week, I went immediately into Seabomb's book. So my book of the week is Finding Home by Lauren Rowe. It was everything I wanted for Seabomb. Aubrey is like his perfect match. Circumstances, like why they get together. I don't know. I just like, it was everything that I wanted it to be. Like, he's still kind of a jerk, but he's my jerk. I feel like at this point, like he just belongs to me. So if that tells you anything, like, I love this book. It was
such fantastic. A jerk.
If you haven't read it, you should, especially if you read Rockstar last week.
So. Jen Ellen's still discussing Sip and Discuss books.
I am.
They are having a really hard time.
Oh, really?
And Jen Ellen is usually like snappy and on top of it. I'm actually surprised she's having as hard a time as she is.
Well, last one is kind of random. It is not an author we hardly ever talk about.
But I feel like we did that with a lot of these choices. Like, we went kind of like, we took a left.
We did take a little bit of a left this time. But we're trying to experience lots of different authors and lots of different spaces.
Well, and one, like, I've been telling people to read her books forever, so I was very excited to, like, force everybody to read it.
It's a good feeling when you get to force everybody to read the books you want them to read. I mean, thus, Whitney, my love.
What is your book of the week?
Delicate Escape by Catherine Cowles. This is book two in the Sparrow Harbor series, I think is the name of the town.
Sparrow Falls.
You know, I have found that I still do like Catherine's books. I just cannot binge this whole series.
You just have to spread.
I have to spread them out. Like, you know, lots of books in between. If not, I pick up on her rhythms and her patterns. And again, I think it's because of how I read.
Well, and you can't read a similar author.
No.
Yeah.
But I did do that, actually.
Oh, you did. You did. Well, you did know
because you did KP again, too. But they were very different this time?
Different narrators.
Well,
different narrators. Delicate Escape was that Seb? Was that Sebastian?
I don't know, I haven't read that series yet.
I haven't read that one.
I did the audiobooks and you
is
know.
Is it Sebio? Because
it's incredible.
Oh, he's a delight for our ears.
I just want to see this. Stop it. Delicate Escape was Aaron Mallon and Teddy Hamilton.
You told me that because I remember saying that's a nice blend as soon as you told me.
And then Kristen Proby's was Aaron Mallon and Sean Masters, I think.
Sean Masters.
It might, but it's enough of a difference from Teddy to that, like.
Well, Sean's deeper. Teddy's higher pitched.
Yeah. So
when you did it the last time too, they had like the exact same tropes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it was both nanny, single dad. These were not. And the female characters. Okay. We'll talk about that in another day. Cause now you're like making my head spin a little bit. Cause I just finished the Kristen Proby book and I'm like,
now we're making our doubter decisions.
Anyway, Delicate Escape by Catherine Cowles. I actually really do like this series cause it is found family, and typically her books are all like mostly siblings together. But these are all kids that these characters are all people that were raised together as
yeah, the last couple were the first couple were more found.
Right.
There's like siblings spread in the series, but she went to more family series.
These are all foster kids that have been raised together at different points in their lives, brought in and out. And so it really has a lot of big found family vibes. I actually was a little surprised at the big bad in the book, which was a little shocking. I mean, I kind of thought it was going to be one or the other, but I was a little shocked with how the turn of events went. So that was good. But again, I have found with Catherine, I have to kind of piece them out and for it to work. And then I really want to read the third book, but I know that I'll like it better if I wait, a little bit. If I wait a little bit. So that's it for Book of the Week. Make sure you're back here Wednesday night for our discussion of Lilac by B.B. Reed. We said this on our episode on Friday. If you have any content or trigger warnings before you pick up Lilac, please check in with me and Amanda so that we can make sure that you are covered, because this book does not have any content or trigger warnings listed in it.
Don't ask me because I haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Anyway, it needs content trigger warnings. Make sure you, if you have any triggers, please check in with me and Amanda so we can make sure that those within our community are safe. So be back here Wednesday night. We'll be back then on Sunday for our 250th Sunday episode.
Yay. That's kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy, right? Okay, so for, well, we don't really talk about any books, but you can find our stuff on our on the shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. You can find a list of books that for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. Don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts over on the Discord. If you loved this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Your support helps bring us more exciting content to you every week. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Those in the chat, thank you for hanging out and engaging with us for this episode. Until next time, everybody.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.